This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Atsaras, this strange disease which affects people from time to time. And the person affected in the case of the Haftarah was a goy. And not a very pleasant goy at that. His name was Naaman, and he was the general of the army of the king of Aram. And they had battled with Yisrael, and he had taken a young girl captive, and she, this young girl, worked for the wife of Naaman. He had one problem, this army general, and that is he was a metzora, he was a leper. He had this disease, tzaras. Nobody could do anything for him. So she, the young girl, says to her master that there's a novi in Yisrael called Elisha, and he has a way with healing people, and perhaps he should make an effort to see Elisha. Passing it a little bit for the army general of Aram to go begging favors from Elisha, and he's been a very arrogant army general. And earlier on, this episode is in Melachim Beis in Perek Hay, but earlier on in Melachim Aleph in Perek Kof, there's already he expresses himself with unbelievable arrogance, not only against Israel but also against the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's not such a comfortable thing for him now to go and ask to be healed from this unpleasant disease by a novi in Israel. So he works it as part of a whole political delegation, and he gets the king of Aram to write a letter to the king of Israel to say he's got this general who has an illness, and perhaps the king of Israel, king to king rather than army general to novi. And the king of Israel gets a terrible fright when he gets this request from the king of Aram to arrange for the medication of this army general, and the king of Israel doesn't know how to go about it. It's not exactly his normal occupation to heal people. He's not a doctor. Elisha hears about it and says, "Don't worry, send him to me and we'll teach him who the Ribbono Shel Olam is once and for all." Yovoi noi lai, says Elisha, "Let him come to me, v'yeda ki yesh novi b'Yisrael, and let him know that there is in fact a novi in Yisrael." Leave it, it's on the floor already, don't disturb a shoe. The next thing is, the Naaman arrives, the susov of the Rikhbay. He comes with his horses and with his chariots and the sirens going and the motorcade. One can imagine the scene, these magnificent chariots pulling up outside the hovel of Elisha, because Elisha was terribly poor. By Yishlach Elov Elisha Malach Lema. So Elisha sends out a shamus with a message. This big army general has come. You can imagine what would happen today if that occurred. Imagine that the chief of staff of the American forces came to call on one of the Gedolei Yisrael. Imagine what would be. All the Hasidim Lach would be outside already, and the red carpets would be out, and the way they would treat him. No, Elisha would have none of that. He's come, he knows who Naaman is, he has no particular respect for Naaman, and he doesn't even invite him in. He has no business in Elisha's home. He sends a message out. What's the message? Now this is in front of all his men. Naaman comes in, he's got his aides with him, and his assistants with him, and his advisors with him, and the whole delegation is there, and they're all watching very interestedly. Here comes the sick man who's going to be healed magically by this novi. So you can imagine they're all watching and listening, all eyes and all ears, and they're going to report back to the king of Aram, and they're waiting for the invitation to come in and be blessed by this man of God. And what happens? Out comes a messenger and says, "Holoich v'rachatzto sheva pa'omim b'yardim v'yoshub sorcho l'chol v'toher." Go and take 7 baths in the river in the Yarden. Give yourself a good wash, and your skin will come clean, and that's it. For an arrogant man, that's not the kind of thing he wants to hear, to be told to go and take a bath. So, vayikzuf Naaman, vayelach. Naaman gets into a temper and he walks off. Vayimrin, he says, "Hineo marti elai, Yetze Yotzei. I imagined to myself, this king would come out to greet me, this Novi, this prophet would come out to greet me. V'omad, and he would stand there. V'kol v'shem Hashem elikov, and he would call dramatically to the Lord his God. V'heinif yodo el amokim, and he would wave his hand over the affected and infected part of my body. V'osef hametzera, and wondrously in front of everybody's eyes, this leprosy would go. I imagined a dramatic effect. I brought all the press with me, the television crew. This was going to be a most wonderful sight to see. Haloi tov avonu farpar naris damesik mikol meimei Yisrael. The waters back in Iraq, he says, are quite clean enough. I don't have to come to Israel to take a bath. Well, that kind of etzei he has to give me to take a bath in the Yarden. If it's physical dirt, I can get it off quite easily in my country, in Aram. I didn't have to come here. Halo yerechatz bohem v'tohoti, I can wash there and I can be cleansed. Vayifin vayerech b'chimo, and he turned around and he walked off in anger. Vayikshu avodo vayedabru elof, and his servants came and spoke to him vayomer, and they said, Ovi, our leader, our father, dova godo anovi diberecha aleisase. Had the Novi told you that you must go and climb onto the Mount Hermon, and you must roll in the snow, and you must ski uphill, and you must ski downhill again, and you must do somersaults in the air, and then you would be cleansed, you would have done it. It would have been no problem. Now all he's asked you to do is to get into the water. Why not do it? Interesting human nature. It actually is like that. If you tell somebody to do something very dramatic, and everything, sure, so he goes and does. If you give him a portion to eat, so he gets disappointed, and he feels a little bit humbled sometimes. That he's been asked to do something so simple. We enjoy the drama rather. Vayered vayitbo bayaden shirapom. So reluctantly he went to the river Jordan. He washed himself 7 times. Kidvar isha elikim, according to the word of the man of God. Vayoshov besoroi kidsar nar kotoin vayitor. And his flesh returned to being like the flesh of a young boy. And he was cleansed. Now, already there are a few observations. The one observation Mr. Kerbel made right after reading the Haftorah, and that is that this is against the Sifuna that we learned last night, where the Sifuna makes it clear that this Tzaraas used to come to Tzadikim only. This was you had to be on quite a level before God troubled to communicate with you with Tzaraas. What's this nobody in Amon being privileged to this communication of Tzaraas? Secondly, what do we expect his reaction to be now that he's cleansed? What would one expect? So he comes out of desperation to the man of God. He reluctantly follows the advice, and the advice works. What was the advice? The advice wasn't you must do tshuva and you must nothing. Just go and wash, dip yourself 7 times into the river Jordan, and it'll be all right. Which he does. What would one expect his reaction to be? Same as Paro. And Paro, when things were rough, oh, Ribbono Shel Olam, pray for me, and there's only one God, and the moment the pressure's off, look, everything's fine again, back to normal. Once again, another clap, oh, Ribbono Shel Olam, Ribbono Shel Olam, the pressure's off, back to normal. We're all like that. When we get under pressure and things are rough, all of a sudden our davening's a better davening, and our emunah's a better emunah, and our bitochen's a better bitochen, all of a sudden we become very firm. And then the pressure's off, and we start relaxing again, and things going normally, and we're back to our bad old selves, as we were in the old days. That's the way it is. V'chalta v'savata, what do we say in the Shema? The Rebbeinu Shel will give us bracha, and you will eat, and you will be satisfied. And then, Yishomer l'chol, now you want to be careful, says the Torah. In case you start following off, when things are going well, when you're eating and you're satisfied, that's the time you've got to be careful of avodah zarah. That's the time you've got to be careful of doing all sorts of funny things. That's human nature. So Naaman, being such a typical example of human nature, we would expect him now to say, thank you, Elisha, and off you go. Very nice. Okay, he found a fellow who gave him good advice. This Jordan water has very special properties, and we would expect him to make a donation to the University of Aram to analyze the properties of the Jordan water to find out what it is that it has, and why this water works and other waters don't work, and that's what we would expect. But not so. Vayoshov Elisha Elikim, hu v'chol machaneh, he returns to Elisha. No reason for him to return, he could go straight home. he goes back to Elisha, he and all his entourage. Don't forget, he's been publicly humiliated by Elisha once, and he's an arrogant man by nature. And he goes back to Elisha, stands before him. And he says, and now Elisha seems to receive him. He says he stands before Elisha. So it appears that Elisha allowed him now to come into the house. Hineino yodati ki ein elokim b'chol ha'oretz ki im b'Yisrael. I now know that there is no God in the entire world other than the God of Israel. Accept a donation for your yeshiva from your servant. And Elisha said, Chai Hashem, Asher amadati lefonov, by the life of Hashem before whom I have stood, Yemekoch I will not take, Vayivtzar bo lekachas, and he pressurized him to take money, Vayemoin, and Elisha refused. And the Medrash says, Chazal tell us that Yisroi Omor, Yisroi came to a recognition of Hashem, and he said, Ki Godul Hashem Mikol HaElokim. Hashem is greater than all gods. V'rochav Omro, and Rochav Hazoyna, you'll remember, she said, Ki Hashem Elokechem, Hu HaElokim Bashamayim Imao. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is the God in heaven. V'Naamon Hoide Bedova Yoyser Mehem, and Naamon acknowledged the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam more than any of them. Shneimar says, Hineina Yodati Ki Ein Elokim Bechol Haaretz Ki Im BeYisrael. The only one is Hashem. There is nothing else. Ein Lid Milvado. So we see Naamon, this nobody, this arrogant so-and-so, who's lived a life of absolute kfiro, denial of the Ribbono Shel Olam and total arrogance. This Naamon, after being healed from his taras, comes to an acknowledgement of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ki Ein Elokim Bechol Haaretz. There is no God in all the world other than in Yisrael. That's Naamon comes to that. Which is against what we would expect. That's not the way that these stories normally go. They don't normally end that way. Normally goes exactly the reverse. That after being healed, they forget the Ribbono Shel Olam. We need to understand this. The tzoras itself of Naamon is totally different to the tzoras referred to in our Sedra. And the Rambam says, the Rambam that we very briefly looked at last night, V'zeh hashinui he'omir b'vgodim u'vavatim. Shekro soy toiro tzoras. This is the Rambam at the end of Hilchus Tumas Tzoras. That this change in appearance, which occurs to clothes and houses, which the Torah calls tzoras, b'shutfus Hashem, using the common term tzoras, einoi miminhagoi shaloila. This is not a natural event. Elo ois ufele hoyo b'Yisrael. This is a sign and wonder in Yisrael. So the Rambam already tells us this did not apply to Goyim. Kedei lahazhiro miloshon hara, to warn them against loshon hara. Sheham besaper beloshon hara, mishtano is kiris beisoy. For if one talks loshon hara, first the walls of his houses change color. Im chozar boy yitoy rabais. If he does tshuva, the house becomes cleansed and returns to its original form. Im omad berisha, if he retains his level of wickedness, at shehutatz abayis, till the point where the house, not being able to be cleansed, has to be destroyed, has to be demolished, bishtanim klei ha'ur, shebeveisa, shehu yoshe, v'sheichiv aleihem. Then the leather furniture in his house begins to be affected. Im chozar bo yitaharu, if he does tshuva, they become cleansed. V'im omad berisha, at sheyisrafu, and if he remains with his wickedness until they have to be burnt, bishtanim abgodim she'olov, then his clothes start changing. Im chozar bo yitaru, if he does tshuva, then his clothes come back to normal. V'im omad berishoy, and if he retains his wickedness, ad sheyisrafu, until they have to be burnt, bishtane oiroi v'yitzareya, then his skin becomes changed in color, and he develops tzoras, Ve'yiye muvdal umefursam levadoi, and he becomes separated and singled out on his own, ad shelo yisasek besichas harashoyim shehu haleitzonis v'loshon hara, to the point where he can no longer participate in the conversation of wicked people, which is leitzonis, cynicism, mockery, and loshon hara. That's the conversation of wicked people. Now the Rambam says, it's true that the Rambam says that tzaraas occurs by Jews only, and that the Rambam says this is an eisufele, this is a wondrous sign that the Ribbono Shel'olam is communicating to the person that he needs to do tshuva. But the Rambam says that specifically about clothes and houses. He does not say that about the leprosy of the skin, the tzaraas of the skin. The Kleyoker learns that since we see, and what he says that what the Rishonim mean is, that since we see that the leprosy of the house and the tzaraas of the house and the tzaraas of the clothes cannot be scientifically explained, and therefore are clearly miraculous events, that demonstrates that the tzaraas of the skin is also a miraculous event, and it has no scientific explanation and no scientific basis. That's how the Kleyoker learns. But Lichoro, it appears on the surface that that's not what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is very specific, and says that it is the tzaraas of the house and the clothes which is not a natural event. He then goes on to say that the tzaraas of the body is the final step in a progression starting with the house. In other words, the Rambam seems to be implying that the tzaraas of the house and of the clothing, that's clearly non-scientific, that's a wonder, that's a miracle. The tzaraas of the body can be one of two things. It can be scientifically based, and it can be the result of the other tzaraas, the continuation of the progression. So let us try and analyze this movement. What is the movement? It starts on the house. From the house it goes to the clothes. From the clothes it goes to the body. That's where it is. So the man with the tzaraas, let's say he's got knots on his hands, and he hasn't yet consulted a kohen, or he doesn't believe it, or he's worried, and he thinks this is a physical disease. So he goes off to his doctor. And the doctor's going to try and analyze him, examine him, to find out what this disease is. But we can see right away that we're looking at the wrong place for the cause. Because what the doctor would normally say then is, before we go any further, is there anybody else in your family who has this? No. Have you been in contact with anybody who has this? Any skin disease? Where have you been? Why does the doctor ask that kind of question? Because he wants to know whether it comes from somewhere else. Might not have originated with you. You might have caught it from somebody. It might be a contagious disease. Now, if the doctor examines with that attitude and he says to him, anybody else who's got this disease? Then he says, yes. Says the doctor, who? He says, my clothes. Clothes have got it. Yes, same disease. The doctor scratches his head, says, anybody else? Before we call the psychiatrist in? He says, yes. He says, somebody else too? Before my clothes got it. I did catch it from somewhere. I caught it from my house. My house had it first. It's the wrong way around. Normally, infection starts with an individual and goes outwards, and then it affects all sorts of other people. Here, he is the end of it. The human being is the end of it. It's an infection which has started with inanimate objects. But the Rambam seems to imply that it's a type of infection. It goes from house to clothes to person. The same disease is coming closer and closer. Why? And that's the peculiar nature of this Jewish disease, of this tzaraas. It's the whole movement, it's the whole progression. It's not just each part of it. The tzaraas of the body, that Naaman can get also, anybody can get tzaraas of the body. But this movement of tzaraas from the home, to the clothing, to the body, that's something which is uniquely Jewish. Why is that? On this whole question of tzaraas, there is a frightening kuzari. The kuzari is in Maimah Sheni, that's the Maimah before the one we're learning on Sundays, in Sivan Samach Beis. And the kuzari says that the kuzari asks the chover, Ach nishar olai sofek tzaraas habayis v'habegid. I don't understand this business of tzaraas, of the clothing and the house. I don't understand it. What's it all about? Omar Echover. So the Chover now explains to this kuzari what tzaraas of the clothing and the house is. Omarti lecho, I've already said to you, Ki hashechino hoiso beYisrael beMadreigas haruach beGuf haOdom, that the Shechino used to dwell among Yisrael in much the same way that the soul dwells in the body. That the type of soul that he's talking about dwelling in the body is not so much the spiritual neshama. What he means by the ruach in the Odom is the life force. That's just like there's a body is driven by a life force, by a pulse of life, and if that is removed, the body dies. So Yisrael was infused with the Shechina, with the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Mo'ilo oisom hachayus ha'elokis. This had the effect of giving them godly chayus, life, life force. There was a dynamicism to the Jewish people fed by the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So just as an individual is constituted of a body with a nefesh, with life force inside that body that keeps it going, so the Jewish people at that time was like a body, and their nefesh, their life force, their dynamics was the Shechina, was the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'noisen eslohem, and this presence of Hashem gave to them ziv, a certain shine, v'hodor and glory, v'gufoisom, in their physical appearances, uvitchunoisom, and in their clothing, over mishkanehem, and in their homes. There was actually a physical manifestation of the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. They looked different. Their skin was different. Their facial expression was different. Their clothing was different. Their bearing was different. Their homes, their buildings, everything looked different. There was a kedusha which radiated from them. Uva'es shemisracheches mehem, and at a time that the Hashem distanced himself from them, mistakeles atzosom, their minds became weaker, ve'yisbaru gufehem, and their bodies became less attractive, less beautiful, ve'yishtane yofyom, and their glorious beauty changed. And when the Shechina removes itself from individuals, nire al admas al adomas ha'ish ahu siman hisrachek ur ha'shechina mimenu, there is evident upon him a symptom, the color of that man's face. There is an evidence upon the man's face, a symptom of Hashem's distancing himself from him. Kasher nire hisrachi karuach pisoim ba'avul pachad oidago mishane haguf. Just as if a person gets a sudden shock, he goes pale. So it's an emotional change which has come over him, not a physical change. And yet you see it immediately on his face. You say, "What's the matter?" And he says, "How do you know? I just had a shock. I had a surprise. I was worried for a moment. How do you know?" He said, "You went pale." So you see, says the Kuzari, that a draining of the life force creates a change, alters the appearance of the skin. So when the life force is made up not only of the nefesh, not only of the biological life force, but included in that is the dynamics of the Shechina, of Hashem's presence, when that withdraws itself, then also there's a draining, and one is able to notice it on the face of the individual. That's what the Kuzari says. This is a very important yesod which we're going to work with this evening. Let's leave it for a moment and deal with the principle of the Ikrim. The Ikrim asks a very basic question. The Ikrim says, how does tefillah work? It's an old question, many people ask it, but not many people know the answer. How does davening work? Ask the Ikrim Imam al-Shaykh, either way. If the Ribbono Shel Olam has decreed that suffering is going to take place to a particular human being, then how can tefillah bring God to change his mind? There's a reason God decreed it, and why should God change his mind? We're not even talking about teshuva, we're not even talking about repenting, just tefillah. And if God hasn't decreed it, then you don't need the tefillah. So what is the purpose of tefillah? Person is about to enter negotiation in a big deal, in a big business deal, and he prays to the Ribbono Shel Olam for Hatzlocha. What do you have to pray for? If God has decreed you'll succeed, so you'll succeed without davening also. And if he hasn't decreed that you'll succeed, then it doesn't help davening. So what is the role of davening? What is the role of tefillah when we're relating to an all-knowing God? Says the Ikrim the following. I'll first tell you simply what he says, and then we'll understand it a little bit more deeply. He says the Ribbono Shel Olam's decrees are not on the basis of a specific decree for a specific human being. This is what's going to happen to Chaim Yankel when he goes. That's not how it is. The Ribbono Shel Olam programs millions of different circumstances depending on where the individual is holding at that particular time. That's really what it is. So let's take our example again of the individual who's about to go into his business deal. Says the Ikrim, for example, if a man, it has been decreed from heaven on Rosh Hashanah, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that a particular farmer is going to make a fortune this year. He's got property which is suited to millets, to maize. That's what he normally plants. And there's going to be a world shortage of maize. And his is going to be the finest quality, and he's going to get a far bigger yield than anything he's ever had before, and he's going to make a fortune this year. It's a gezeira from the Ribbono Shel Olam. He has a bit of Ruach HaKodesh, and he figures out, Rosh Hashanah has been a very good Rosh Hashanah and a good Yom Kippur, and he figures out to himself, he's sure that Hashem has planned some good things for him this year. So Ebazeh, he says to himself, I can take it easy. So he says, why should I then plant? I don't need to plow, I don't need to plant. If I'm going to get it, if the Ribbono Shel Olam is decreed, I can take it easy. Says the Ikrim, of course he won't get anything. I bet the Ribbono Shel Olam decreed, but that was conditional. The decree was conditional to him putting in the effort, to him planting, sowing, reaping, doing whatever he has to do. That was the condition. If he does not fulfill the conditions of the decree, then the decree doesn't get passed. Likewise, says the Ikrim, there are conditions to every decree, conditions in the subject. The individual has to be holding in a particular place in order for that condition to occur. So the Ribbono Shel Olam might decree for an individual brocha and atzlocha and good health and all sorts of wonderful, wonderful blessings. But the whole thing is conditional to him being on a certain level. If he's not on that level, then those decrees don't apply. There are other decrees for him. So what the Ribbono Shel Olam does between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is it's not just a decision that Chaim Yankel is going to make a million this year. Reuven Shimon, he's going to be very healthy this year. It's not like that at all. It's Chaim Yankel. If he will be holding here, then this is what will happen to him. If he'll be holding here, this is what will be. And millions of different alternatives as to what can happen to him during the year, depending on where he's holding. And where he holds depends on himself. That's his own free choice. So in fact, says the Ikrim, we have it within our hands to determine where on that scale that the Ribbono Shel Olam has drawn for us, we choose to place ourselves. And we will draw on the Ribbono Shel Olam's blessings differently depending on where we are. But the scale is all designed before. The scale is all designed Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time. Consequently, says the Ikrim, when a person stands in davening and opens himself to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and says to himself and to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm in your hands, Ribbono Shel Olam. Ein oyed milvade. I believe there's nothing in the world but you. There is no kach, there is no power, there's nothing I can do, there's nothing I can achieve. It's all in your hands. That's what tefillah means. To be able to stand in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the belief that one is standing before He who controls the entire universe. Before He who controls every aspect of our own lives. If we stand like that in tefillah, says the Ikrim, we don't come out the same. Then we're changed people. Changed people get changed gezeiras. Not that the gezeira has been changed really. Not that God's decree has been changed. That was part of the decree to begin with. That if he will daven, and through his davening he will elevate himself, then different things will happen to him. So you can have a person who's finding himself under heavy decree, terrible things are happening to him, Nebuch, and he davens, and it can be that through the elevation that takes place, can be, it's not necessary, it depends what the decree was. But it can be that through his elevation as a result of his davening, the decree changes. That doesn't apply anymore. That's how the Ikrim learns the principle of tefillah. And the Ikrim says that's the principle of tshuva. What does repenting mean? How can you change God's mind? Repenting is, I'm not the same person anymore. The gezeira still applies. You decided, Ribbono Shel Olam, that Chaim Yankel should suffer bankruptcy this year, chas v'sholem. I'm no longer that Chaim Yankel that you made the decree about. I'm a changed human being. I'm not the same person. And that the Ribbono Shel Olam is prepared to accept. Different person, a different function. And that's also the concept, says the Ikrim, in changing a person's name when he's ill. It's not just hocus pocus. The idea of changing a person's name is that together with that comes tshuva, and the person, taka, changes identity. I'm a different person. I'm a new person. That's the straightforward understanding of what the Ikrim says. But with this piece of kuzari, we can understand the Ikrim with an added dimension. Because this kuzari is a remarkable thing. The kuzari says, firstly, his basic principle applies specifically to this tzoras. The basic principle is that in those days there was added glory to the Jewish person. And tzoras was merely the removal of that added glory. Tzoras was not the imposition of a disease. It was just a dropping. In other words, we look at ourselves and we all have a certain complexion. If one of us will be sitting here and will suddenly go very white, we'll look at the person and we'll say, are you feeling alright? But if that person has just flown in from Antarctica, where he's lived for the past few years, or from London or Toronto or one of these other places, and he comes here, then he'll say, no, I'm feeling fine. The reason I'm so pale is because I haven't seen the sun for 9 months or whatever it is. We hardly ever see the sun and I've just come in, that's why. We judge people's complexions by the way they look in terms of what's normal. But what would happen if we were all, if our life force was not just a normal life force, but if in addition to that, we had the chayus of the Shekhinah, that we were aglow with God's presence, that there was a dynamicism, that there was a life in our faces, a sparkle in our eyes, which is totally unique. And one individual would lose that. We're all sitting here and our eyes are shining and our faces are alight, and there is a fire of glory all around us, and we're sitting here and we're learning and studying, and one person suddenly goes dull. That looks like any of us look now, but compared to the rest of us, he looks dull. What were we saying? Feeling alright? What's happened? Where's your Shekhinah gone? Are you alive? But what's happened? It's not that he's become sick, he's just become normal, that's all. It's because everybody else is super normal. That the removal of Hashem Shekhinah creates tzoras. So the first chiddush and the kuzari is that tzoras is merely the return to normality in a person who before that was far above normality. And that's why we don't see tzoras today, because we've all got it. It's just that it's normal. The tzoras was simply the effect that used to take place when the Ribbono Shel Olam removed himself from that intense closeness which he used to have with Bnei Yisrael, and he doesn't have anymore. So that means they looked, when they had tzoras, they looked like we look. That's what it is. But when they didn't have tzoras, then they looked like something we can't possibly imagine. That's the meaning and that's the understanding of this kuzri. But we can take that yisoid a little bit further, not only for tzoras, but generally. And we can say now that what the Ikrim is saying is, in a sense, that a gezeiro is not always a cause and effect very separate from one another. Because you did A, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I am going to punish you with B or with C or with D or whatever. Could be something else altogether. It could be that the gezeiros, the suffering which people go through, is simply a measure of distance between an individual and the Ribbono Shel Olam. The closer one is to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the better things go. Just as we see in the Kuzari that when they were very close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they looked healthy, they looked well, they looked beautiful. There was a ziv, and there was a yofi, and there was a hadar, there was this glory and the shine, and there was this beauty to them. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam removed himself, there was a deterioration in that appearance. So it is in everything that occurs. It doesn't have to be only in the area of tzoras, for example. You can have a situation where a person says, oi, I've got a headache. What does that mean, oi, I've got a headache? So normally the way we look at it is what's happened to me? Why have I got a headache? And then he fixes himself up, takes a rest or whatever, and the headache goes, good, back to normal. But the way to look at it using the Kuzri's principle is not that. The way to look at it is, oi, I haven't got a headache. That means the Ribbono Shel Olam is close to me, because normal is to have a headache. Normally, the normal thing is not to be healthy. The normal thing is that things shouldn't be going well. And the Ribbono Shel Olam intervenes constantly to keep things together and to keep things going well. Sometimes he pulls back a little bit. Well, in fact, it's not he who pulls back a little bit. Sometimes we pull back a little bit. And that added distance between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam has negative effect. And we feel it immediately. In other words, the Kuzri throws a completely different light onto our understanding of what is normal and what isn't. And of course, it's not such a far-fetched concept. What's entropy? Entropy is that the natural state is chaos. The natural state of the world is it should be destroying itself. That's how it's supposed to be. The Ribbono Shel Olam, through all sorts of forces, is constantly working to keep it together. I was talking to Rav Meir Soloveitchik a couple of months ago about the community here, and he was questioning me about the unsettled atmosphere that people feel like leaving. Why do they feel like leaving? Where do they feel like going? What's the... We discussed it. And he said, one doesn't realize what it takes, what koichos of the Ribbono Shel Olam are used to keep a community together. We take it for granted. The community is, that's where everybody is, that's where everybody stays, finished. But it isn't like that. Everybody's an individual, a unique individual with his own ambitions and his own ideas and his own programs and his own agendas, pressurized by his own pressures, affected by all sorts of different things. Naturally, there should be no such thing as a community. How can a group of people stick together? What is there in a group of people that should keep them consistently together? What can there be when you've got individuals? And he said, when you look at some of the great communities of the world, how they've disappeared off the face of the earth. Places where there was a yeshuv of Yidden for centuries, for millennia, and all of a sudden, very quickly, one or two people leave and it's gone. One thing for them, one takes it for granted, isn't it? It's all okay. One or two people leave. And you find that they're key people and the place disintegrates afterwards. And there's no zecher, there's nothing left. A few years later, it's gone, nothing. And one finds that in various places in the world, even in contemporary history, even nowadays. One finds that this change where there was something before and it's gone. In South Africa, we see it in the small towns. Yeah, the small towns, how long ago was it that there was a thriving community there? Go there, nothing, absolutely nothing. And it happens in big cities as well. Such things happen, we take it for granted. But he said to me, you can't imagine what koichos are needed constantly to keep a community together. It's so unnatural. And it's against the forces of nature that the Ribbono Shel Olam holds it together. The point of the Kuzri is that any well-being is unnatural. And it's the Ribbono Shel Olam holding it all together. And any distancing from him results in increased entropy. Things start falling to pieces. Therefore, it could be what the Ikri means is that the act of tefillah is simply a drawing closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If one draws closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, then everything changes. One's whole, one is closer to that source of energy. And that really is the essence of it all. That our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is not merely a formality. It is not something, just a ritual that we go through. Our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is that we draw our vitality from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Draw our vitality from it. It's possible to look at a person's face and to see with a fair degree of accuracy where he's holding in his Avodas Hashem. Not where he's holding generally, but where he's holding today. Right today. The face of a person who's had a good davening in the morning is totally different from the face of a person who hasn't had a good davening in the morning. The same person on a morning, on a day, when he's davened well, to a day when he hasn't davened well, the face looks different. Totally different. A person's had a good session of learning, the face looks different. The person's been involved in chesed and tzedakah, the face looks different. You can see immediately. I mentioned to you once, I think, that a little booklet that came out when I was a boy in yeshiva that made an enormous impression on me was a diary of a boy in Slabodka who drowned a couple of years before, and they found his diary and they published it. And he had various notes and some devotee that he'd written out. A big tzaddik and a wonderful person, this young man. And one of the things he'd written over there is that if one realized how much one gives away, how much, just by one, the appearance of one's face, most of us would be embarrassed to walk in the street. We don't realize how open our faces are, how much they really tell, how much they really give away. Not just of the personality, oh, that's certainly, if one knows how to read a face. But that one can still disguise a little bit if one's a good actor. But there's more than that. There's the dynamicism, the life force. That's what the Khuzri is saying. That in the times when Yisrael was birthed, this is an extreme example the Khuzri gives, that in those times there was a Ziv Vahodo, but that exists even today. I remember Rabbi Elia Lopkin used to daven at the front of the Beis HaMedrash. It was a big Beis HaMedrash. I used to daven near the back. And I used to, it was my job on certain days, to take him home after the davening. So I used to walk up, if that's, he was already very old and he found it very difficult to walk alone. And he used to leave his walking stick outside the Beis HaMedrash. So to get from his seat to the entrance to the Beis HaMedrash, which was at the back, he had to walk all that way without his walking stick. So he used to lean on somebody. So after the davening, I would go up to him and put my arm out, and he would lean on my arm, and I would slowly take him out of the Beis HaMedrash. And one day we were walking out, it was Mincha, it was just after Mincha, and we were walking out of the Beis HaMedrash, and he stopped. And there were boys who davened longer than the Beis HaMedrash, davened Shmuel Esra longer, either because they were long daveners or they came in a bit late. So very often it happened that when after the davening was over, there were still quite a number of people left the davening. And he just turned around, he was facing the wall, that's how he was davening, and he now turned around to walk out. And he took a few steps, and he stopped, and he looked. Just looked around at the boys davening. And I'll never forget the look on his face. It was the same kind of look as if one has just taken to see the most beautiful view. Imagine a situation where you're taken to the top of a mountain and you come round a corner or you come to the top and there in front of you is the most magnificent view in the entire world. That look on your face when you just look in wonder at the beauty of it all. He just stood there and looked around the Beis HaMedrash as if he'd never been there before. Looking around, enjoying it. His face was alight with enjoyment. And he saw me looking curiously at him. And he said, isn't it beautiful? And he saw me still looking curiously. And he said, look at the faces. Like Malachi Hashem. Like angels of Hashem. Look at them. He just enjoyed watching the faces of the young boys davening. Now that look doesn't come from nowhere. That look firstly wasn't put on because these people were all davening. Most of them were their eyes closed. Most of the people were out of the Beis HaMedrash and they didn't know they had an audience. And where does that look come from? That look comes from tefillah. That is the result of being infused with that energy, with that spirituality, with that kedusha, with that sanctity of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But the Khuzri says here, it's not just the sanctity, it's a life force. The difference between somebody who has it and somebody who doesn't is the same difference as somebody who has blood flowing through their veins and somebody who doesn't have blood flowing through their veins. That's the difference. You look at a dead person and you look at a live person and you can see straight away, this one's alive, this one's dead. How do you tell? You can see immediately the change. Says the Khuzri, that's the same degree of change that there is between somebody who has the Ribbono Shel Olam flowing through his veins and somebody who doesn't. That's what closeness to the Ribbono Shel Olam means. Not that he's there and we're here. We plug into him. We actually plug into him and his energy goes through our veins, through our insides, physically, not just spiritually. And our appearances change, our eyes change, our skin changes, our bearing changes, our faces change. That's what it means. And one then understands the Khuzri further on that we are doing on Sunday, where he talks about how one has to plug in frequently. Every morning, Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, all different degrees of plugging in, but it has to be done constantly because you run down. It's like having one of these kidney machines, a recharger. You've got to plug yourself in, get yourself all filled up again, and then you can go for a little while, and you have to come back and plug yourself in again. And if you don't, you die. Not physically, but spiritually. And it's true, you can revive yourself again, but until you do so, you're walking around like a ghost. That's the difference, and it's so clearly visible in a person. One feels the difference in oneself, and one sees the difference in others so clearly. Now, with that understanding, perhaps we can analyze the Rambam with a little more clarity. The Rambam says this tzaras of houses and clothing, that's for sure something miraculous. This is not spiritual. This is not a physical, it's not a material disease. And when physical tzaras, when bodily tzaras is the consequence of this progression, then it too is part of this whole scene and is not a physical disease. Why? What is the meaning of it all? The tzaras starts at the house, comes to the clothes, and then to the person. What does that mean? What is the message? The message is not just taken in isolation. The message is the progression, the movement. This whole concept of movement is just so important, the dynamics. I went to a doctor once for a checkup. It was the first time I had that particular type of checkup, and after we finished with all the tests, I said, "No." Sorry, I'm not in suspense, it's everybody else. So I said, "So what's the decision? How's everything?" He says, "I don't know." So I was really worried. "What do you mean you don't know? After all these tests, and then you tell me you don't know?" He says, "Next time I'll be able to tell you." So I said, "Manish Tano, this time you won't know. Are you going back to medical school between now and the next time?" No, he says, "I can't tell. You're within the general parameters of normality. But we have to watch changes. That's what tells me what's going on with you. We've got to watch the dynamics. The next one you'll have, I'll see where it's going. Is it going up? Is it going down? Is it staying static? It's from the movement." It's a very important lesson in life, that it's where one's going that's important. You've got to compare where you are compared to where you were yesterday. Where you are is not what's so important. What's important is where you are compared to where you were yesterday and where you're going to be tomorrow. That's what determines what's really going on. So it's not just looking at the house, looking at the clothes, looking at the body. But watch the progression. What is the movement, the direction? That's what's important. From house to clothes to person. What is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam trying to say to me? You are being infected by your environment. That's what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants to say. And you have no business being affected or infected by your environment. They're running an experiment at the Johannesburg Zoo, you might have seen now, where they put a man in a cage. And there have been various spoilers given in the newspapers over the last few days as to why they're doing it. And I haven't understood any one of the svaras until today. In today's newspaper, there was a svara which already makes sense. They wanted to show the difference between man and animals. You see how far it's come. Look what you've got to do now to show the difference. You've actually got to go to the zoo and watch an animal and a man to notice there's a difference. If you go to town, you won't see the difference. If you go to the stock exchange, you won't see the difference. If you walk in the streets, you won't see the difference. They've got to actually create an experiment and show people, look, he's a man and he's an animal. Different, not the same. Despite what Darwin says, what do they want to show? That animals adapt to their environment, and that is the secret of their survival, and that man adapts his environment to himself, and that is the secret of his survival. That's already chokhmah. Today they gave that was the reason for the whole experiment. I don't know why it took them so long to come up with that reason, but that's what they said. Perhaps that's really an observation, not an intention and not a reason. Tzaras, as described by the Rambam, is to show the human being that the opposite is happening. The dynamics are from the outside to the inside. The walls of his house, to his clothing, to himself. Your innermost being is being affected and infected by your immediate environment and by your further environment. And that's not the role of a human being. A human being has to affect his environment. The dynamic should be from the inside, outside. You should be changing your clothes. And you and your clothes should be changing your house. And your house should be changing your community. That's the changes that should be taking place. Not inwards. And that's the connection with Lashon Hara. The Rambam goes on. He says, ultimately the purpose is that you are isolated from that society which is influencing you. That's the ultimate. That's the way one atones for it. And he says that the final thing is that a person should realize that if one wants to direct one's ways, permission, anybody who wants to direct himself, But his way is leitzrachek mi yeshivos and the miladaber imoim. A person should distance himself from certain social groupings who have these negative effects on him. And he's got to realize that if it has this negative effect, what does one do? Well, very well, people say, you know, one has to be strong enough to face everything. And you need to know that there are all these negative influences in the world, and you must be able to go and still not be influenced. Have you heard that argument? But that's the argument. Go and still not be influenced. The Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam says, don't be there. Don't go there. Why not? Same with disease. It's all very well saying AIDS, doesn't matter AIDS. One must be able to go there, and one must be able to have to do with these people, and be part of it all, and know that it exists, and be strong enough not to be affected by it. When it comes to physical disease, we're not so brave. When it comes to physical disease, no thank you. Let's just keep a distance. Spiritual disease, we're prepared to be giboyim. We'll risk infection. Because spiritual disease isn't as important to us as physical disease. That's all it means. Our olam habo is not as important to us as our olam hazeh. If our olam hazeh is being threatened, we want nothing to do with it. If our olam habo is being threatened, so what? Be makariv them. Go and be makariv people with AIDS. Go on. Go and be makariv. Invite them to your home. You go to their home. Sit and eat around the table with them. Share things with them. Why not? Be makariv them. Bring them closer. Chas v'shalom. No. Absolutely not. Their business. They got themselves into that. I don't have to risk my life and the life of my family. That's only olam hazeh. But when it comes to olam habo, we're so brave. All sorts of funny people, invite them in, and we'll go to their houses, and they'll go to ours, and we won't be infected by them. Says the Rambam, it doesn't work, and that's the message of Tzuras. To remind you that the same principles that govern physical disease have to govern spiritual disease. And you have to distance yourself from people who are infectious. And what is infectious? Leitzonus, Roshon Hara. Those are the infectious things. To sit with a Mechalel Shabbos, you can manage not getting infected. To sit with an Apikuris, bad news, but you can manage, you can come out not being affected if you don't do it too often. But to sit with a Leitz and not being infected, that's not so easy. To sit with a person, a Medaber Loshon Hara, a person who talks Loshon Hara, not so easy. There one becomes infected. And it makes no difference, the Rambam makes no distinction between whether they're frum or they're not frum, whether they're religious or not religious, whether they're Jewish or Gentile, that's not the point. If they are leitzim, if they are cynics, who destroy with their words, who undermine, who mock, who devalue and debase, one can have nothing to do with it. And it's always a source of amazement to me how people find that they're able to handle this kind of situation. AIDS, they wouldn't, and all sorts of other things. And even to be with Mechalel Shabbos, there are many people who wouldn't like to be with Mechalel Shabbos. Oh no, I want certain separate, I want my children to be only in frum schools so that they're constantly in the environment of frum people. Wonderful, lovely. But to sit with a leitz and to share his leitzonus, to sit with a medaber loshon hara and to share his loshon hara, it's all the shem shemayim, of course. But there's no fear. That, says the Rambam, is the message. You can have nothing to do with these people because you've got to see the dynamics. The dynamics is from society to house to clothes to individual. And the only solution is isolation. That's the only way that one can repair the damage. What about Naaman's tzoras? Naaman's tzoras was not this dynamic tzoras. Didn't start with the house. Didn't go to the clothing. It started with him. He had leprosy. And nobody could heal it. This was not so much of a miraculous thing. This is not the same kind of tzoras. This is a different tzoras. And how does it get repaired? Not with tshuva. He doesn't get healed by improving himself. Certainly not on the surface, doesn't appear so. He comes to Elisha full of brazenness, full of arrogance. All Elisha says to him is, go into the river seven times. Goes into the river seven times, comes out healed. There's no tshuva, there's no changing, there's no tefillah. What is the connection? Why is this the haftarah even for this week? What have the two got to do with each other? As the Rambam says, it's shituf Hashem, it's using the same word for completely different concepts. There appears to be no similarity at all. And yet there is. Naaman was an arrogant man. Elisha's treatment of the tzaras is based on his understanding that one of the things for which tzaras comes the Medrash says, Lama Mitztareya, why did Naaman get tzaras? That's the first thing I suppose Elisha had to determine to himself. Where did it come from? Where did he get it from? Where did he catch it? So one would expect him to go to the Department of Virology to find out where the virus originated from. No, says Chazal, Bishvil Sheshovo Me'eretz Yisrael Nara Ketana. Because he captured a young Jewish girl from Eretz Yisrael. That was the source of his tzaraas. Why? So the Medrash goes on, it says, V'chein ato moitze lo osid lovo, and so you will find in future times, V'zoiz tiyama geifo, and the Medrash then quotes from Zechariah, this will be the plague, Asher yigrif Hashem es kol ha'amim, which the Ribbono Shel Olam will bring upon all the nations, he make besorei, their flesh will disintegrate. Al yidei ma, for what reason? Al yidei shenisgol b'Yisrael, because they showed arrogance over Yisrael. So we see that there's another kind of tzaraas which affects non-Jews, and it results from dealing with the Jewish people in an arrogant, offhand way. They are affected by this tzaraas. So Elisha understands the source of Naaman's tzaraas is the arrogance with which he dealt with Israel and captured this little girl and just took her home to work for his wife without any understanding of the Kedushas Yisrael, of the sanctity of Am Yisrael. What does Elisha, how does Elisha treat him? The whole thing is part of the treatment. The beginning of the treatment is Elisha's refusal to come out to meet him. The second part of the treatment is Elisha's refusal to invite Naaman to come into his house. The third part of the treatment is go and take a bath. Seven baths in the Yarden. Humiliation. Trying to break down that arrogance. What is Naaman's reaction? Then jump in the lake. He's telling me to jump in the Jordan, let him jump in the lake. We've got clean water in Aram as well, I don't need the Yarden. And his men come along, his servants, his shamosim, and they say to him, look at the, try it, if you're here already, what can you try it? Tries it and it works. What does he realize? He doesn't go and make a donation to the University of Aram to study the qualities of the River Jordan. He knows full well that if any scientist in the world would analyze the waters of the River Jordan and would analyze the waters of any of the rivers of Aram, they would find no significant differences. Certainly no differences that could explain the effect of the water on the tzaraas. That he knows for sure. He knows also that his tzaraas was not dirt, that he didn't need the water. He knows that too. So he has enough seichel to realize that the seven dippings in the Yarden is not what cured him. What did cure him? He realizes the modesty. The fact that I had to go and take instructions from Elisha Shamus, and the instructions were to go and take a bath. In front of all my people, I brought them all this way to see this dramatic event which was going to take place, and I had to go through all this. That means my tzaraas has been removed from me because I have changed. He understood the principle of the Ikrim, an unbelievable achievement. The tzaraas has been removed from me because there's been a change in me. One doesn't only have to change the object of the disease. Sometimes the disease can remain where it is, but if one changes the person, it no longer affects one. Doesn't one work that way in medicine too? Sometimes you've got to treat the disease itself. You've got to get rid of the disease with antibiotics and all sorts of things to get rid of the disease. Sometimes that's not what you do. Sometimes you've got to strengthen the body. If you strengthen the healthy part of the person, then the body itself, then the disease goes in the mail. Says, Naaman, I realize what Elisha's done. He hasn't fought my disease. He didn't give me drugs. He didn't chant incantations. He didn't pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam for its removal. He changed me. Education, chinuch. I'm not the same person. I understand now for the first time in my life what it is to be modest. And the tzaraas is gone. Then I realize that there's no God other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. What does that mean, there's no God other than the Ribbono Shel Olam? The Ribbono Shel Olam operates on this principle, that the effects are caused by the individual, by your status, by how close or distant you are from the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's all that matters. Everything else naturally flows from it. If you're close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're healthier, you're better, things go better. You're further away, things go worse. That's the principle of the Ribbono Shel Olam, different to every other God and every other religion. But it's a matter of fact. There's no magic to it. There are no magical prayers. What is prayer? What is tefillah? It is merely changing yourself. That's all. That's the principle of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I now realize that that's the only principle in religion altogether, says Naaman. And now we understand that although the tzaraas of Naaman was different to the tzaraas referred to in our parsha, the effect of the tzaraas was the same effect as is meant to be in the parasha. And that's why this is the haftarah. What is the effect of the tzaraas? The effect of the tzaraas is the opposite of Paro. Why? Because Paro realizes, Paro says to himself, the normal state is well-being. That's how Egypt has been for centuries. Comes the Ribbono Shel Olam, interferes with plagues. So I've got to get the Ribbono Shel Olam off my back. Gets Moshe in and says, get the Ribbono Shel Olam off my back. Pray to him, do what you want, just get him off me. The Ribbono Shel Olam heals the situation, and Paro's vision is, oh, now the Ribbono Shel Olam's gone. So Paro sees the presence of God as a cause of trouble. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam is far, then things go fine. And in truth, that's the way we normally see it ourselves. We can say what we want and we can think what we want, but our actions prove it. That when things are going well, we feel far from the Ribbono Shel Olam. When things are going hard, we feel close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why? Because we think that the Ribbono Shel Olam close means trouble. That's how we see it. And when he just keeps away from us, then we do fine on our own. When do we turn to him? When we're in trouble. When do we feel a need for him? When we're in trouble. When he's really close and he's really holding our hands and guiding us through, we don't feel him. We don't notice him. Why not? We don't realize that that's not normal. We think that's normal. And he interferes to cause trouble. And then we say, why is he doing this to me? Should be pun fakir. Normal is trouble. Normal is chaos, entropy, ill health, financial chaos, scientific chaos. That's normal. Nothing should work. Normal is a little bit like life in Eretz Yisrael. Nothing should work. One can't explain. You ask, how do things work? Nobody can tell you how anything works. How does the economy work? Nobody knows. How does the security system work? Nobody knows. How do the roads get repaired? Nobody really knows. How do things, that the place functions? How does it happen? Normal is it shouldn't happen. Elamai, the Ribbono Shel Olam in his chesed, guides us through. Mechadesh b'chol yom. Every day the Ribbono Shel Olam renews Maaseh Bereishis. It's a recreation. If the Ribbono Shel Olam would leave the world alone and stop creating for one moment, it would all collapse. That would be normal. If the Ribbono Shel Olam just removed himself, everything would be destroyed. But the abnormal is Mechadesh b'chol yom. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is continuously involved in the Chiddush of Maaseh Bereishis, in renewing the act of creation. That's the involvement of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Naaman understands that principle, the principle of the Kuzari, the principle of the Ikrim. That when one gets tzaraas, that's not because Hashem has given you tzaraas. Hashem has just reduced the degree of his involvement with you. Or rather, you've reduced that yourself. And when you haven't got tzaraas, it's because the Ribbono Shel Olam is close to you. When things are going badly, that's merely a consequence of distance. If you were a little closer, things would be going better. Says Naaman, I now realize that the normal state is tzaraas. That's how everybody should be. And it's because the Ribbono Shel Olam cares for me that I don't have tzaraas. Therefore I understand and I appreciate and I retain that appreciation of what the Ribbono Shel Olam really is. We've mentioned many times before of how tragic it is that we only appreciate things when we've lost them. But it's a fact. There's nothing we can do about the fact. That's how it is. And we can talk about it as long as we want and we can complain about it as long as we want and commiserate about it, but that's how human beings are. That no matter how much they think they appreciate something, they really don't until they've lost it. Whether it's health, whether it's wealth, family, whatever it is, one doesn't really appreciate it until it's gone. That perhaps is the most disturbing, the deepest sensation of avelus. Of a feeling, now my close person has been taken away from me and only now do I realize what he was and what that relationship was. And now it's too late. That's the depth of it. And what can one do? One can't comfort a person even. There's nothing one can do. One has to come to terms with it that that's what human beings are. The only thing we can try and do is simulate loss in order to appreciate having, in order to appreciate what we've really got. And that perhaps is the understanding of all this that we've discussed this evening. To understand that every moment that we're feeling okay, no headaches, no aches and pains, we're able to walk around, we're able to get on with our job, we're able to understand things, we're able to communicate with one another, that we're able to enjoy family. Every moment that we've got that is a moment where the Ribbono Shel Olam is putting into us enormous koichos to keep it that way. And that chas v'sholom, a relaxation of those koichos, and it all just goes. and that would be absolutely normal. What's happening now is not normal. And the realization that a closeness with the Ribbono Shel Olam is not a formality or a ritual, but that a closeness with the Ribbono Shel Olam is a reality upon which we draw. It's a reality upon which we draw. It's a dynamics which affects us. It affects everything that we do. The quality of our davening, the quality of our learning, the quality of our ma'aseh mitzvahs and their frequency. All this determines who we really are, where we're really standing. These things are meant to change us. They're meant to infuse into us a kedusha, a sanctity, a chayus, as the Kuzri says, a liveliness, a dynamicism, which isn't otherwise there. And that dynamicism is so clearly evident when it is there, and so obviously absent when it isn't there. And there's nothing that one can do about it. That's just how it is. And if one knew it, it was, again, it's just a question of loss. One doesn't realize it until one's lost it, until one realizes that one's lost it. But when one's got it, it is something so precious and something so special. It is a gift which the Ribbono Shel Olam has put into our hands and said, here I am, this big dynamo is here. All the kedusha, all the chayus, all that life is here. At any time you want, you can plug into it and you can have as much of it as you want. It's all available. You can have that dynamicism, you can have that sharpness, sharpness of perception, sharpness of expression, sharpness of intellect, everything that goes with it. All you need to do is plug in. A good davening, a real davening, repeated again mincha time, repeated again ma'ariv time, learning a little bit of musar every day, learning a good black gemara thoroughly, strongly, with understanding, with depth, and you've got it as much as you want of it. Just plug in. And we don't take advantage. That's where we fall down. That's where we lose out so terribly. But the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us that capacity, the ability to plug in, the ability to draw, and the ability to use that chayus, to use that dynamicism, to the point where in theory one can reach the level that the Kuzri describes, where there's a yofi, where there's a special sanctified beauty, where there's a ziv, where there's a shine, and there's a hadar, there's a glory of mankind.